The Mac Observer's Mac Geek Gab, episode 700. Woohoo! For Monday, March 12th, 2018.
Welcome to the Mac Observer's Mac Geek Gab, the show that takes your questions, your tips, your cool stuff found, all of it. We mix it all together. We share answers. We share everything here with the goal of learning at least five new things every single episode. That's every week, every time we get together, the goal, all of us, every one of us, me included, five new things. Two new sponsors for this episode that include Ring, where at ring.com/MGG, you can save up to $150 on some killer packages that they've put together for their video doorbell and floodlight cam. These things are awesome. We'll talk more about that in a minute. And also Molecule with a K, M-O-L-E-K-U-L-E. This air purifier is, simply put, freaking amazing. And coupon code MGG save you $75. So we'll talk more about that later too, here in Durham, New Hampshire, with evidently Peter Brady helping me crack my voice. I'm Dave Hamilton.
And here in Fairfield, Connecticut, John F. Braun.
How you doing, Mr. John F. Braun?
Oh, just recovering from a latest nor'easter.
It's show 700, so I figured we can't do this without...
Here in another part of Durham, New Hampshire. Pilot Pete, thanks for having me, guys. Yeah,
show 700. That's pretty cool.
A nor'easter. Boy, was that fun or what? They said 8 to 12 inches in our area. I think what they meant was to put 8 plus 12 inches.
Yeah, we got
We got slammered. Yeah, yeah, we got 22 inches of heavy, wet snow.
Yep.
And my snowblower's broke, so I got it all by hand.
Oh, yeah. Oh no. Yeah. That's not okay.
My youngest got some of the deck done, and then his back hurt. Okay, yeah. I get it, pal.
Yeah. So we lost power here. It came back, but we lost power. Actually, we lost it late on Wednesday night, and then it came back for about an hour, just long enough for me to wake up, go turn all the UPSs on, because the UPSs, of course, when the power goes out, the UPSs start beeping, and that's annoying. So it's just like, okay, we know it's going to be off for a while, so we just go power them all off.
Yeah.
And then the power came back on. I was asleep. Lisa was up, and so she kind of woke, you know, in her like coming back to bed or whatever, she woke me up and it was like, oh, cool, power's on. Great. So I went around, I turned everything on. And as I was turning the last one on, I'm thinking, you know, we're still due to get like another 10 inches of snow. And it was right at 32 degrees. So this snow was wet and heavy, like Pete said. And I thought, yeah, is this a fool's errand? Like, it doesn't matter because I had just turned the last one on. So I go up to bed. Literally, as I'm climbing into bed, I see the clock next to the bed go off. It's like, yep, here we go. So I just, it didn't, I went back downstairs. I turned all the UPSs off again, got back into bed, looking at various reports from my routers and like my Fing box and things like that. The power actually came back on again throughout the night and then went off. It was off for almost exactly 24 hours for us. But midday yesterday, you know, I got an email that one of our ad agency contacts needed like information for a proposal ASAP. And it was like, oh, well, got to deal with that. Yeah. You know? Yeah. This could be a big, big campaign. Like they're in a, you know, this new client that they brought on is on a rush and it's great. It's cool. And it's actually a great client. And you know, that actually we've dealt with before in a different way. So I was like, how quickly do you need it? I called him and he's like, yeah, you know, pretty much ASAP. So I thought, okay, wait a minute. You know, I've got the generator going. I had the generator. We have the house and the office are on separate feeds from the street. And so while I was out there, like kind of clearing off some of the snow, we let the office run for a little bit just to heat up the hot water pipes. And then we cut it over to the house for the rest of the day so that we'd have like power in the house and we could, you know, do stuff and cook and watch TV or whatever. And so before I cut it over to the house, I thought, you know, the Comcast line often is alive even when we don't have power. And sure enough, I powered up, instead of just powering up the boiler, which is what I had powered up, I flipped the switches to power the office up. And sure enough, within about 5 minutes, you know, everything had powered up, and I watched the cable modem sync up just fine to the Comcast signal. And so I had Wi-Fi in the office and was like, okay, sweet. So I sat there on the couch in the office with my laptop. I didn't bother turning on the iMac or anything, and did the, you know, put together the proposal, sent it out to him. All good. Great. Powered the office down. And then we went out to lunch, and then we came back and powered up the house. But, you know, you can cobble these things together if you just stop and think, like, all right, what tools do I have at my disposal that I can use? And it worked out pretty well. So, you know, nice. All's well that ended well. Yeah.
We're usually the first ones to lose it. I was shocked we didn't. So
yeah, our neighborhood here is, it's older, you know, it's the houses are
bunch of trees in your neighborhood, Dave. It's
it is. Yeah.
The lines are all up on the poles.
And the lines are all on the poles. Yeah. So you did not lose power, is that right, Pete?
No, the whole That's time. Good. Not even a flicker. I was shocked.
Wow. Yeah. Wow. How, and John, you didn't lose power?
I didn't, but about 25% of my town did.
Hmm.
I got real lucky.
I was going to say, that's a lot. I mean, here, 25% is like low. But for you, from what you've told me over the years, it seems like that's a significant amount for your area.
Yeah. Well, I think most of it was, you know, trees and wires down. And there's less of those in my area, or at least I actually got the branches trimmed
for sure.
The homeowners insurance company at one point. So there's less of a possibility of bad things happening to my house. Like,
it's interesting that your homeowner's insurance would do that. I was going to say your electric company will generally do some level of that if it's touching the wires.
Yeah, I've actually noticed.
Well, they do that too.
Yeah.
Well, anyway. this was over the house.
Oh, but that's different.
Power company is doing a trimming program as well.
Cool.
Some of the tree huggers don't like that, but hey.
Hey, that's not nice, John.
At least in our area, they've done a much better job. So I think that's probably why we didn't lose it. Because in years past, we've been horrible. But anyway.
All right.
Hey, I bet you guys want to talk MacGeek
stuff. Let's move on to the show. Yeah, that's right. Okay. So Les actually had a question that we held over from last week. And I am going to apologize. I told that story at the beginning of the show, A, because it's interesting. But B, the weather for all of us, John, you had some sewer-related stuff go on. And so we are under-prepped today. I think we've got enough, actually, for a show. We always are over-prepped. So really, I'm probably apologizing or at least, you know, setting the bar for no reason whatsoever. We do have some great sponsors this week, and I really encourage you to check them out. We'll give you the links and stuff, and we'll tell you more about them. But these are very cool things. Some of them, both of them, have actually changed things in my house dramatically in the last 2 weeks. So please check out those links. That's all we ask is that you check out the links for the sponsors. You don't have to buy anything, obviously. If it's something you want to buy, great. If not, as always, that's just how it works. Our job is to get you to go check out what they're offering, and it's their job to convince you that it's good for you. So, all right. With that, and thank you for everything. It's show 700. Thank you. Like, seriously, wow. All of you. Thank
that's
you.
A lot of shows.
It's a lot of shows. Thank you. I don't know how better to say it than that we can sit here, you know, 700 episodes later.
What's the anniversary in June?
Anniversary is in June. June 13th will be 13 years.
13.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's the 13th. I want to say it's the 13th, but something in my head says the 12th, but I don't think that's right.
Yeah.
All right. Anyway, now on to Les. Les asks, over the years, iTunes has become more and more picky as to what videos it will play and or transfer to the iPhone or iPad. On a recent MGG, I learned of a command to convert videos that were unplayable on iTunes. The problem is that at one time, I would get an alert box warning me that certain videos would not transfer to my iDevice because they couldn't be played on it. I would try to convert the videos one at a time to mixed results. After much frustration, I checked the "Don't Show Me This Again" box. Is there a way to undo this? I would like to see which videos were unplayable and try to convert them with the command I learned from the show. So, yeah, it is a per device. iTunes has a per device memory for this kind of stuff. So you need to plug in your device, or at least connect your device. If it's connected Wi-Fi, that's fine. Go to it. And then when you're in iTunes, scroll down. So you click on the device that's in now iTunes. It's just like a tiny little device icon in like the top of the iTunes window. But once you're there, scroll down on the main screen of that, scroll down to the options setting on that first screen, and you'll see a reset warnings button. It's below the whole like automatically sync with this phone is connected, sync on Wi-Fi, where the convert higher bitrate song setting is, all that stuff. Right below it is a reset warnings button. And you click that and it will reset for that device on that copy of iTunes. So if you've done this from other machines or whatever, or you've got multiple iDevices, that's more likely you're going to need to do this for each of them. So there you go.
That seems like a lot of work.
It's iTunes. I mean, you know, remember, they've been piling more features. And
cramming it in there.
Cramming it in.
I got an easier solution.
What's that, Pete?
Well, let's go get a new iPhone.
Well,
just saying.
would that do it, though, if he inherited his iCloud backup?
Oh, maybe that wouldn't.
Yeah. I don't know the answer to that.
Yeah, I don't either, but I bet that.
But I would put an asterisk on it.
That flag is tagged.
Yeah.
Could be that way. Yeah.
I don't know.
Have to start over from new.
Yeah. Yeah. So
I'm glad I've said that as a joke, but now that's something to go.
Yeah.
For people to think about it. When they do get a new one, why is it not working like I want?
Les had a second question, though, and I don't know the answer, but maybe one of you does, or John, maybe you do. He says, I edit the metadata of video files in iTunes, director, notes, star rating. As I type the information in, I get a list of suggestions, which would be great, except they include every fat-fingered mistake I've ever made, ever. This gets in the way of words I'd actually, you know, like to use. Is there a way to edit or start the suggestions fresh? I don't know the answer there. I feel like Spotlight would be, you know, kind of at the core of this, but I don't know. So maybe rebuilding the Spotlight index would do it. I don't know. I don't know. Thoughts on that, John?
I mean, once you manually change the data, you could see what pref file or files have been updated, and that may give you a pointer as to where that data is stored. That could be a chore.
Oh, that's true. Yeah, sure. Yeah. I don't know. All right, man. You want to take us to Steven?
Yes. We got an update from Steven. So this one was really bizarre, but I thought I'd share it because Steven writes, hi, guys. My MacBook Pro early 2011, will not turn on. The power cord usually has either a green light or a yellow light. Now I have no light. I tried another power cord with the same results. Does this mean the battery is bad? I've been using the app you talked about on MGG that cycles and checks battery life. It said it was still good. I'm not sure what to do next. Well, I'm almost certain what it is, Dave.
Okay.
But I was wrong. But
okay. Well, tell us what you thought it was, because it might be what it is for someone else. Yeah.
Yes. There is a component within that Mac or anything that uses MagSafe called the MagSafe DC in board. Because the thing is, with MagSafe, there's actually a little dance that happens between the adapter and the computer where it does a little negotiation. You know, and they talk to each other to figure out the capabilities and stuff like that. And if that board's bad, then you won't get a light. Or so I thought. And actually, you can see this information. So I had kind of a brain fart here, and then I told him this when he said his machine wouldn't turn on. But the thing is, if the machine did turn on, you could go to System Information, Hardware, Power, and then there should be a listing that says AC Charger Information. It'll tell you things like it's connected, the ID, the wattage, revision, serial number, all that stuff. So if you think you're something's wrong with your system, you can look there to see how much power should be coming out. Fortunately, iFixit does have a little ditty on how to do this repair. And I think we'll link to this, and I pointed him to this. And they also sell the part. Now, the thing is, the difficulty, from what I recall reading that article, they claim it's a very difficult repair.
I'm just looking at the part and looking at it. I mean, it's a very simple part in the grand scheme of things, but just looking at it, it's like, oh, dude, to get to where you could unplug and replug this thing, probably not easy.
Yeah, you'd have to tear the whole machine apart. Yeah. So, now the only thing is, so that's a 2011 machine. You know what that means, Dave and Pete? It's in vintage status.
I was going to say, so Apple won't work on it.
And that's what I said. So I said, Apple is almost certainly not going to do anything for you. But if you find an Apple authorized service provider, they may work on it.
That's good to remember. Yeah.
So that was my closing advice there. And then he got back to us. And here's the weird part. So he says, a follow-up on my problem. I took my MacBook Pro to an Apple authorized service provider, the Mac guys in Costa Mesa, California, and they found my system software, High Sierra, was corrupt. This most likely was due to low RAM. I've maxed out my RAM and it's working great. Before I added the RAM, the Mac would take forever to wake up, and now it wakes fast.
Huh.
It's like, huh? So I'm like, you know, I'm glad they solved your problem, but based on the initial email, I would have never guessed that it was a system software problem.
So the machine wouldn't charge. It wouldn't even turn on, and somehow that was system software?
That's what he said they said.
So how did they get it to turn on, though? I realize I might be asking a question to which we don't have the answer, but...
My guess would be that they probably put in a charged battery and were able to start up the machine, and then it got into a state where it was okay again.
That I will believe. Yeah, something needed to happen to the hardware. Either there's some magic reset, like a SMC reset kind of thing, although it sounds like that sort of already happened by default here. Or remember, and I don't, Macs don't have this anymore, but there used to be a CUDA button, C-U-D-A, on the motherboard of all the, I think it was all PowerPC Macs is what it was. And that was like the magic button. And if, you know, I remember the first time I found that, I had a client who like things just didn't work. And it was like, I was looking around inside. I'm like, I wonder what this red button is. And I even turned to the client. I was like, well, I'm going to push this button because nothing else is working. They're like, yeah, cool. Go. And pushed it. And it was like, bing, all good. Boom. Yeah. So, an SMC reset would do it, maybe. So, yeah, interesting.
I mean, it could have been, because the age of that machine, it could have been that the battery was... batteries can get into what I think they call a deep discharge state, where something like this could happen. So maybe the strategy, I'm guessing what they did is they jump-started the battery or gave it a little boost.
Mm-hmm.
And then they determined that the system software was bad. So I think it was a it was a combination of hardware and software.
Yeah, but, that's interesting.
Sounds like those guys, they got it down, man.
They got it down.
They knew they fixed it.
So. That's great. Cool. On the troubleshooting front, we heard from listener David, who shares a tip, and if I can find it, there it is. He says, "One other troubleshooting task I've used, this is in reply to in show 699." We were talking about that weird thing where Safari was launching on unmounts and that sort of thing. He said, one other troubleshooting task I've used when I get these oddities is to log out of my main user account and log back in using an admin or a test account. This lets me figure out if it's a systemic setting or a user specific setting that's giving me a better idea then of where to go and look for what the problem is. And especially for that problem, that is exactly the right thing to do. It can save you so much time. If you don't have a test user account set up in that case, or in that instance, it would have been easy to set one up and then go use it. That said, sometimes the issue is that you can't even log into your account. So having a test user account set up ahead of time is my recommendation. It's what I do on all of my machines. And then that way it's just there. And if I need it, and if I wind up using it where I make significant enough changes and I just sort of go with my gut on what enough is, then I'll wipe it out and create a new one after I'm done. But otherwise, if I go in and I just do one or two things or whatever, I'll leave it. If I feel like it's pristine enough, then I just leave it, you know, for the next time that I need to do it. So, along those lines, though, we got an email from Don, who shared a tale of woe that is very interestingly related. He says he's got a late 2015 27-inch iMac running High Sierra, and he's got a 1 terabyte SSD running APFS with 32 gigs of RAM. And he says he runs this 24/7 because he uses it as a Plex server. He says, beginning a couple of months ago, I started to have a problem with the iMac after it had run all night. It has been my habit to run the system maintenance application Cocktail's daily maintenance script first thing in the morning. Cocktail would launch, but when I tried to have it run what it calls essential system maintenance, Cocktail would crash and immediately relaunch. The only way to cure this behavior was to reboot the iMac, and then Cocktail would work as expected. This behavior occurred only after the machine was left running overnight. Cocktail problem occurred consistently. Another issue began to occur, albeit inconsistently, was that the desktop icons of the mounted external hard drives would disappear. Also, from time to time, when I tried to open a folder, alias on my desktop, I would get an error message that the alias couldn't find the target folder. Force quitting Finder would solve both the missing desktop hard drive icons and broken aliases. I took all kinds of steps that did not solve the problem. First, I completely removed and reinstalled the application Cocktail. I have rebooted the Mac into safe mode and then restarted into normal mode. I ran Disk Utilities First Aid on both the system hard drive or on the system hard drive from the recovery partition. I ran Apple's hardware diagnostic tests. I reinstalled Mac OS from the recovery partition, spent a couple hours on the phone with Apple support. All of those, no joy. The steps that I took that did solve the problem. I created a new administrative user that I called sysadmin, or, you know, test user, doesn't matter what you call it. And he says, and when I logged into the new account before going to bed, Cocktail ran fine under this new user first thing in the morning. In addition, there were never any Finder wonkiness happening while logged into this new user account. That was my clue that one or more of the programs that launched on startup and ran in the background was at fault. Therefore, I removed one program per day from the list of programs that start on launch on startup. And he went into system preferences, user groups, and then would remove one and then let it run overnight. I did this daily until I removed Drive Genius from the launch on login group. Bingo. Note that I was running the latest version of Drive Genius. That was the solution. Removing Drive Genius solved the problem that I had with Cocktail and the Finder wonkiness. Says, I haven't yet written to ProSoft to let them know of the problem I had, but I will do so soon. He says, I've used Drive Genius for several years and have always found it very helpful. He says, I'd be very sorry if it proved to be a problem under High Sierra going forward. So very, he says he is running it on his 13-inch MacBook Pro with High Sierra with no issues and certainly none of these. But that is like, so super kudos to you, Don, for taking the long view of this and not only testing it with that other user account, because that confirmed for you that it was something in your user account. I know you had already put a ton of time in, but that saved you even more time because you were no longer guessing. You knew it wasn't your computer. It was just that user account. And then systematically, one at a time, and for you, one per day, because it was per day that you could test this once per day. Patience paid off, man. I like you. I hope Drive Genius isn't actually the issue and that it was, you know, or isn't a long-term issue for you. But yeah, that's really good stuff, man. Like, thanks for sharing that. I like it. What do you think, John?
I don't know what to think anymore.
No?
No, good story.
I think he's lucky that D is close to the front of the alphabet. It's been many more days.
That's true.
Know, I mean, it's just...
Yeah, yeah, right. That's how that... Yeah, you just kind of... You know, when I'm in a scenario like that, I do trust my gut.
Sure.
In terms of which one I disable first. And sometimes...
Yeah, but you know, that, as you know, that can also lead you astray, because who would think, you know, a program is solidly written as Drive Genius.
Sure.
Would,
yep. No, it's true. But that might have made Drive Genius fall to the bottom of the list.
Yeah.
I'll trust my gut, though, especially for the first couple, just because you got to start somewhere. and you might as well start there. If there's a lot of things to turn off, and this is more reminiscent of my time troubleshooting Windows than the Mac, but the same principle applies. If there's a lot of things, I'll disable them in batches. So if there's 100 things, let's say, I'll disable and test in batches of 10. And then that way I know, okay, all right, it was batch 3. So now I just need to narrow down amongst those 10 as opposed to, you know, one per day, 99 days. So
is there a way to fool a computer to thinking that a day has passed? So you could do this.
You know, that's where I feel like your gut might hurt you. Well, yeah, because is it truly like, is the trigger for this, the clock being more forward, or is it time related and has nothing to do with where the computer's clock is, but you know, that some app ran for a while and bloated up and ran, you know,
clock cycles have gone by.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. Right. So, yeah, sure. I mean, I don't know, you know, yeah. I don't know. Cool stuff.
He solved it. Why am I trying to help solve it?
No. This is what we do on this show. It's all about the troubleshooting. You know, here we are. We're at like the 26-minute mark, and now I'm worried we're not going to fit everything in to this episode that I was worried we didn't have enough for.
I'll be quiet now.
That's okay. Hey, I did have a thing yesterday, though. My son had a problem with his iPhone, John, and it started. I believe the model. It's an iPhone 7. It's actually my hand-me-down iPhone 7. I believe the model is A1660, and I think this particular issue that he had is specific to that model. It's an AT&T iPhone 7. So the issue started with him getting no service, and you know, he would remove his SIM card and put it back in, restart the iPhone, and it was fine. And then, sort of unrelated to that, he decided that he had so many apps on his phone that he really only uses like 7 of them now. And he decided, you know what, I'm just going to wipe my phone and start from scratch, not restore from a backup. And, you know, instead of going through and trying to delete all these apps, I'm like, well, okay, fine. So he did that. And his phone he did just an erase, you know, on the phone, the reset all programs and settings or whatever. And it wouldn't come back from that. It wouldn't install. So then he tried it with iTunes. This was all unbeknownst to me.
Yeah.
Then he came to me, I don't know, a week ago or whatever, and was like, okay, hey, you got a minute? I need your help. I'm like, sure. And so he tells me all this, and I was like, oh, yeah, that's not good. And it would get, you know, halfway through the restore process and then stop with error number 3. Like, okay, crap. So I tried it on my computer, both with iTunes and then iMazing, just to see if I could get any error messages that meant anything. No. So I booked an appointment with the Genius Bar. And then I posted on Facebook about it in our Mac Geek Gab group at MacGeekGab.com/Facebook. And one of the guys, Dan Deering, who is the manager at Mac Edge, our local Apple authorized service provider, he said, yeah, that if it's this model iPhone, that is a known issue. And sure enough, it was. So we went to the Genius Bar yesterday, and they actually didn't swap it out as we were hoping. They shipped it off. So I could have just taken it to Mac Edge to do it. Right. Mac Edge was like, well, we have to ship it out. So it's like, you might be better off going to the Genius Bar. In this case, no, I should have just gone to Mac Edge 3 or 4 days ago, whatever it was. But anyway, we shipped it off while we were there. I always keep a spare iPhone around. So we have an old iPhone 6S that was the spare that he's been using. The battery on it shot. So while we were there, we asked the Genius, hey, you know, can you do a scan on this battery and possibly replace it while we're sitting here? He's like, yeah, sure, no problem. And then he came back around after we kind of did the whole thing for the iPhone 7 that we were sending off. And and by the way, you know, not to bury the lead here, but that particular repair is covered by Apple even for an out of warranty iPhone. It was an issue with them increasing the tolerance on the EEPROM that the firmware is written to, presumably to help prevent jailbreaking, but they went a little too far. So not only could jailbreak firmware not be installed, but neither could Apple's firmware.
Is that a problem?
Yeah. So they think, but you know, they're like, oh yeah, yeah. Like there was no issue at all. They were like, yep, you're right. It's covered. No problem. Like there was no negotiation. It was great. So, but the guy came out and he's like, look, with the snowstorm, we're backed up. my manager said, I can't squeeze you in because you don't have a separate appointment for this battery thing. And I'm like, he's like, you know, I'm really sorry. I'm like, no, you know what? I get it. I'm not going to hold it against you. No problem. He said, but go talk to them at the front and see if maybe they can like get you an appointment. And then you're right here. I'm like, okay, cool. So we go to the front and the woman was great, but she said, look, it's 3 hours to get another, you know, a walk-in appointment. But she said, do you have the Apple support app? And I said, yeah, I think so. She's like, okay, well, launch it on the, she said, I can book you an appointment on the phone. You can do this whole thing on the phone and do your battery replacement by mail, which with this particular phone is fine because it's a spare one, especially once the other one comes back.
Sure.
She's like, so do it. You know, you can either call them in the app or you can even chat with them in the app. And she said, they can do the whole diagnostic right there in the app and you don't have to. Yeah. And Pete just had this look on his face like, really? Yeah. So I told Lucas, I'm like, okay, while we're on the Wi-Fi here at the Apple store, download the app onto that phone. I'll drive us home. It was about a 45-minute ride home while you go in the app and do your thing. So he did. He started a support request inside the app. He chose to chat with him, but he could have done a phone request. The chat turned out to be great. He got a guy. He actually told the guy everything that was going on, including the fact that we were at the store with a different iPhone. The guy was able to kind of keep all these separate thoughts in his head. He knew that this was a spare phone that we needed to use right now. But he said, you know, he went back and forth with him. Okay. Yep. He said, let's run a diagnostic on your phone. He said, can you go to the private? Do you know how to go to the privacy settings? And Lucas was like, yeah. And he goes to the privacy settings and he launches the screen. And then on the screen, like right after it comes up, a new entry appears that said start diagnostics for Apple support. And it says Apple support has requested to do diagnostics of this. Will you allow it? And so, of course, he started it and it ran a diagnostic. And while, it, you know, once it finished, Jeff, who was the support rep, came back in the chat and was like, yep, it looks like your battery is consumed on this device. That was the term they used, consumed, not dead, not, you know, consumed. So he's like, we have three options. You can bring it to a Genius Bar. You can mail it in. You can bring it to Best Buy or, you know, whatever, or an authorized Apple provider. Lucas was like, well, we'll just mail it in. We're going to have a box from the other one that's coming back. The guy's like, great. You got to turn off Find My iPhone for me to set this up. But he's like, but then turn it back on until you get your other phone back. Then turn Find My iPhone off again. But this whole remote support thing was great. I mean,
that's awesome.
Like they could do the whole thing. And it wasn't, I mean, we weren't even on a Wi-Fi connection. We were driving down the highway at 65 miles an hour while Lucas did this whole support thing. And before we got home, it was finished and he got a link in his email. Now, the link in the email was just to pay for the support request and then we go drop it off at UPS. But the payment was $35.95. So I haven't gone to pay for it yet. They say don't pay for it until you get your other phone back because that way it starts the timer on when you've got to ship it and all that. But I'm guessing there's a $6 shipping fee that we are paying in addition to the $29 battery fee. But super easy.
Yeah.
And for anybody that's having trouble getting an appointment or doesn't want to have to drive back and forth to their Apple store or their Genius Bar or whatever, that's really awesome.
That is great
to
know about.
They can diagnose this stuff from remote. Did you know about that, John?
Mac, though.
On a Mac, yeah. Sure, I've seen him do it on the Mac, but I've never seen him do it on iOS. I just didn't know. Yeah.
Well, I think there's an entry in system info where it I think it was there, but they said, oh, yeah, and go to this place in system info.
On the Mac,
and I think you can say yes.
Yeah,
and
okay.
I think you can submit a system summary.
Sure.
To Apple. Yes, actually, I'm looking right now. So system information, file menu, send to Apple.
Yep.
So sometimes they'll...
they'll take over your screen. You. I've had them do that on my Mac. I've had them completely take over the screen.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep. But yeah, I had no idea that this was possible with iOS. It's, you know, of course, a free app from the App Store. But I recommend everybody put this app on your iPhone. I certainly put it on mine, and I mean, it hasn't caused any problems. In fact, in this case, solved one. But Yeah, having that right there, no matter where you are, as long as you've got internet.
Right. That's awesome.
It's awesome.
My repair that I had recently, where I had the screen replaced before I upgraded my phone.
Yeah.
I made a Genius Bar appointment, and then I ran the support app, and it's like, oh yeah, by the way, just thought you'd like to know that you have a support.
Oh, it knows about your appointment too. Oh yeah, the Apple Store app. I didn't have the support app on my iPhone, but I was the one that booked the appointment. So when we got within range of the Apple Store in the mall, of course it popped up and it's like, hey, go see a person. You have an appointment. Like, yeah, cool. Thanks.
Nice.
Yeah. Yeah.
How do it know?
I know. It's crazy. It's crazy. We've got some cool stuff found to do. Let's do it, John. Shall we? Do we have it in us? I think we do. We will start with Bruce. Bruce says, given all the recent discussions about the limitations of APFS, here's a cool stuff found bound to make John happy. And John, the folks at Paragon Software have made, they're the ones that made the thing where we could talk to NTFS volumes, right? They made the APFS retrofit kit for macOS. And this is free, at least at the moment. I think it'll stay there. And it will run on 10.10 through 10.12, which is Yosemite, El Capitan, and Sierra. And it adds read-only support for APFS volumes to all of those things. So if you have gone through the process like you have, John, where you have external drives that are APFS, or you have to, you know, take a drive out of a dead Mac and mount it in something that's not running High Sierra, Yosemite, El Capitan, and Sierra, read-only access to your APFS volume for free, which is very cool, if you ask me. I wish Apple would do that. But you know, it doesn't have to, right? You just download it for free. Good to go. Pretty good, right?
Where do I know? Yeah, they also make some NTFS.
That's what I just said. Yeah. They make the NTFS stuff. Yeah. You must have been prepping something else.
Yes.
Okay. That's okay. No problem.
Yeah.
All right. You with me on this? Because I got some cool ones to talk about.
Oh, yeah.
I've been testing out this thing called the MyScript Calculator 2. This is for iOS. You can use your finger to draw calculations on the screen, and then it turns them into numbers, and they work. And you can do some pretty crazy stuff with this. You know, division, like complex equations you can edit. Like, it, as you're typing, it kind of turns them into real numbers. As you're scratching, it turns them into real numbers. But if you made a mistake, you can like cross it out on the real number that it turned it into and write in your replacement or whatever. It's pretty cool. And you can do linked equations where it all just works together. It's really, really cool. So, MyScript, the folks that do all that stuff. So now Calculator 2.
Kiwi Graham in the chat room says he thinks they do a handwriting iOS keyboard.
They do. They're the ones that did that handwriting iOS keyboard. Okay. Yep. Okay. And so now they've built a calculator app that's like purpose built with this stuff.
Sweet.
Yeah. Yeah. It's pretty good. Pretty good, John. I know you're a calculator guy like me, so thought you might like it.
Yeah. Or a math guy. I remember working with a guy who used MathCAD, which I think is as similar as you, but it doesn't OCR your stuff. But.
Right, right, right. Yeah. Cool. Let's see. Where are we here? We have from listener Larry. Sorry, I was jumping ahead of ourselves here. Listener Larry says, Watcher, WAATCHER.com. He says, Amazon is constantly changing prices based on inventory and interest, etc. Watcher, with two A's, continually watches prices and alerts you when there is a change. You can indicate an item you want, and every time the price drops, you'll get an email. He says, as a note, I've received as many as 20 price change alerts in one day for a single item. You can also indicate your desired price and set it and forget it. And when Watcher encounters the price, it places the order for you. The creator is making money with referral links. So, you know, he's like, make sure that if you use this service, click his links to, you know, support the app. So he says you can also use it in conjunction with your price match credit cards on stuff you've already bought. And when you get the alerts, submit it to your credit card company and get your money back. He says you could just use it to find a cheaper price to match for, buy it at Best Buy and track it at Watcher. When a cheaper price alert comes in, boom, get your money back from Best Buy too. He says, personally, I've saved some serious coin. So thanks, Larry. That's a good one. I had no idea. Pretty good. Right, John?
Yeah.
Yeah, cool. Hey, lawyer Jeff chimed in with something. Actually, we ran a piece on it at Mac Observer about a week ago, but Troy Hunt launched this website called Pwned Passwords, P-W-N-E-D, for those of you not up on leet speak lingo. But what it does is it checks to see if your passwords have been leaked on the internet, and they have more than 500 million passwords in the database. And so even if you think you have like a one-time use but a, you know, a unique password for a website, it's possible that it's been leaked. And so you'd want to change it. Well, if you use the 1Password service, then you can, it will automatically check all of your passwords against that database to, and tell you which ones, if any, have been leaked. So
that's a pretty good one. Monkey's been pwned. Can you
Monkey?
Believe, can you believe
what?
It?
Dude, how did you know my password, Pete?
Sorry, man. Didn't mean to. It's been pwned. Not to worry.
It's been pwned. Yeah,
I didn't leak it out on you, man.
The URL for Watcher to answer John Linthicum in the chat room at MacGeekGab.com/stream is Watcher with two A's, W-A-A-T-C-H-E-R. Very, very cool. I've had the opportunity. Go ahead, John. What's that?
Did you mention... Sorry, again, I'm distracted here because I'm...
Yeah, focus on this stuff because it's good for us to have these back and forth, so...
Yeah. Have you done Have I Been PWNED.com?
No.
Signed up for that once.
No.
Okay. Oh, yeah. I did good. That a long time ago. Yeah. It checks your
and
email
it actually,
address.
Yeah, so you give it your email and then, yeah, so it sounds like a similar service to them. So check that one out. Have I Been PWNED.com.
Huh. Cool. I'll put that in the list. Yeah. Huh. All right. Cool. I've been playing lately. You know, I know you're a TiVo guy like me, John, and lots of our listeners are TiVo folks because, you know, they make life way easier. I've been checking out the new TiVo Vox remotes lately. These things are pretty cool. It's a TiVo remote, but it has a microphone in it, and you can pair it up with your TiVo. I think it's got to be a Bolt or a Romeo or a TiVo Mini. And there's different models that you get if you've got a Romeo or a Mini, because you have to get the little receiver for it. But you can – it like supernatural language stuff, much better than I've experienced with like voice assistants in general. But it is very specific, you know, because it's the TiVo, and so it knows what kinds of things you might be asking it about. But you can do cool stuff like, hey, you know, you just push a button on the remote and you say, show me all – you know, Chevy Chase movies and then say from the 80s and, you know, or Only Vacation. And it just starts linking it together, but it like jumps you right around and jumps you right to what you want. And it will even build, like I said, show me Patriots games, right? And it brought me to a screen for Patriots football games that I have never seen before. And then let me create a 1Pass that seemed way more intelligent than any 1Pass I've ever been able to create before.
Interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. It's pretty cool. And they're, you know, it's like $40 or whatever at Amazon. You can get one of these remotes. So it's pretty, pretty interesting. I didn't think we would, like when they said, you know, when they showed it to me at CES, they're like, oh, we'll send you some to test out. And it's like, yeah, wow. Like we use it way more than I thought we would. But because it's sort of natural to just, you know, this is what I want to watch.
Yeah, no, that's cool. It's yeah. Amazing where AI is going.
I know. Yeah. 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 It's pretty good. You got one? Any questions on that or thoughts on that, John, before you move on?
Nope.
Okay, cool. You want to take us to the next one, John?
Yes. So I went through some of the goodies that I've gotten at recent shows here. I finally took some time to do that. It's a tough life, you know?
Yeah.
But Here's a what I think is a unique product. It's called the Halo Go Drive Pro.
Okay.
And so what it is it's a lightning cable. So it has the lightning plug on one end, which you plug into your iDevice.
Sure.
And on the other end is a USB connector. But here's the clever part. Inside the USB connector, you put a micro SD card.
Okay.
And what can you do with it? So you can do a whole bunch of things. So it'll, like some similar bridge products, like a SanDisk, you know, we've mentioned, make some of these as well, which has USB on the, and perform a similar function, but I think it's unique enough. So it can do backup of your photo and video from
sure.
your device
yep.
to
yep.
the SD card. It'll show you your photos in a timeline. You can even snap things from your camera directly to the SD card. So that's kind of neat.
That is cool.
So it's so it, yeah. You can play music and videos. You can share the devices on it. I had a little trouble with this, but you can share things either from the app to other apps or from other apps to it.
Okay.
And you can save it within the app. You can save things from within the app itself. And it also, of course, acts as a charging cable.
Oh, so it's kind of kidding.
Three things in one. Yeah. So
wow. That's like the perfect little travel companion.
Yeah, that was my thought. And if you, though I didn't read the instructions, which, you know, my bad here. So the first thing I did is, you know, I plugged in my computer and it mounted the SD card as a drive. And then I tried plugging it in to the iDevice and the app didn't recognize it. And I'm like, oh, it must be broken or something like that. The thing is, if you plug it in as a drive, that's the functionality that you get. If you plug it into the phone and the USB is not plugged into anything, then the app can talk to it.
Right. Okay. All right. Yeah, of course. That makes sense. Yeah.
Huh. That was my little fumble. But pretty handy. They're in the UK.
Okay.
I got it at a recent show. It's £19.99, but you can get it, and you'd have to pay for shipping, which I don't think you want to do from the UK.
Is it not available in the US yet?
Oh, no. They have it in Amazon.
Oh,
I'm
going to
try to link.
Oh,
yeah,
okay,
I have it
perfect.
In my notepad here. There's a link on Amazon.
All
right,
so
$24.99. And you provide your own micro SD. I think they say up to 512 gigs.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure. That's
cool.
So,
cool.
That's number one.
All right, cool. Hey, before we move on, and because these things are cool stuff found, it's not even that we're moving on, we're just staying with cool stuff found. I want to talk about both of our sponsors today, John, if that works for you.
Absolutely.
All right. Our first sponsor today certainly falls into the category of cool stuff found, and that is Ring. I've known about Ring for a little while because I knew that they made this video doorbell. But I'd never tried one until recently. So I've tried not only their video doorbell, but also their video floodlight camera. The idea behind this is pretty simple. You've got these devices on the outside of your house. They can track motion. They can see what's going on, and they can provide two-way communication. So from my iPhone, I can see who's at my door or who's in my driveway because I have a floodlight cam aimed that way at any time, right? No matter where I am or what I'm doing, I can go and activate these cameras and see them. But if there's motion, and it's cool because you can go in the app and set these things, I can get an alert that there's motion, and then I can go see these things. Like I said, it's a one-way camera. I'm the only one that can see, but it's a two-way audio device. So I can talk to these people and hear them, whoever's there in my driveway. Let me play a clip that they sent us from one of their things here.
Hey, sorry, we're in the middle of dinner. Can I help you?
Yes, how are you?
Good, how are you?
Good, I haven't seen you in a while.
I don't know who you are.
I'm Justin.
I don't know you, Justin.
I met you a long time ago when I was younger.
No, I'm sorry, you're in the wrong place.
Much love and God bless.
Yeah, so I don't know if that guy was like a crook or just truly in the wrong place, but either way, right, it doesn't matter. She didn't have to open the door. She didn't even have to be home, right? And that's the cool part. Like in our house, our living room is kind of on the, like our driveway is on the south side of the house. It like our house is sort of sideways to the driveway. So the driveway's on the side of the house. Our living room's on the north side of the house. If we're expecting someone, or especially if we're not, we can't really sit in the living room and monitor what's going on in the driveway. Well, now with Ring, we don't even have to. We certainly can. We could have our phone or our iPad, you know, up showing the live view of the driveway. But we can also get a notification that says, hey, there's somebody in your driveway. And you sort of like, it's cool. Once you set up the camera, you draw these things, like I said, and it like on the picture. And you can choose where in the camera's field of view triggers a motion event. And then we can just look and it's like, oh, hey, you know, I can say to one of my kids, like, your ride's here or whatever. It's really, really cool stuff. And I can save you some money. So you can save up to $150 on a Ring of security kit at ring.com/MGG. Again, that's ring.com/MGG. Save $150 when you go to ring.com/MGG. You got to check this out. This is the coolest new gadget that I've used in a while. In fact, my wife says this is the best gadget that I've ever brought into the house. So check it out. ring.com/MGG. Our thanks to Ring for sponsoring this episode. Our second sponsor for today is also a new sponsor and also falls into the category of cool stuff found. It's Moleque. We're at moleque.com. You can get this really awesome air purifier. Like, my wife has had allergies. We all suffer from allergies, right? We lived in Austin, Texas, which is like the allergy capital of the world. And it kind of lingers with you after that. Once you start suffering, it never goes away. Well, the Moleque folks didn't like the fact that we had this, you know, really old, like 70-year-old technology on HEPA filters that was like the best thing we could use for, you know, clearing allergens out of our home, because our indoor air is like way more filled with this crap than the outdoor air generally is. I mean, unless you live next door to, you know, some like pollutant factory or something. But generally speaking, you know, your indoor air is what really needs to be purified. And so they developed this thing that they call, it is called photoelectrochemical oxidation. And what it does is it not only traps these things that are 1,000 times smaller than a HEPA filter can, but it also then kills them off, right? So a HEPA filter just traps them, but it's still right there. This actually kills them off. And they say one customer said she was able to breathe through her nose for the first time in 15 years. We set this thing up, and I can attest to this. We set it up. And we put it in our bedroom to begin with. We've tried it in different rooms of the house, and it's really actually made a huge difference everywhere we've put it. I walked into the bedroom maybe 20 minutes after this thing started, and it was still in what it called its initial processing mode or whatever. Dude, this thing, like the air in that room, I've never experienced this before in my house. I could feel it like in my nasal cavity. It was just like, oh, this air is clean. So good. And it's super easy to set up. It's even got an app where you connect it to your Wi-Fi and then you can check the status of the filters. They'll automatically send you filters because the thing knows and it can talk back to the, you know, mothership of Moleque or whatever. And you can save $75. So again, go to Moleque, Moleque.com. And at checkout, enter promo code MGG. This thing truly has been life-changing inside our house. It's really, really quite something. And you got to check it out. Again, Moleque, Moleque.com. Promo code, easy for me to say, MGG will get you $75 off of this really killer, super simple to use air filter, air purifier. It really is. It's all of that. And it really destroys all the pollutants in your air. Check it out. Our thanks to Moleque with a K for sponsoring this episode.
Up next. So this is something I actually spent my own coin on. It wasn't a lot of coin, but looks like it has a lot of features for what I paid, Dave. It's the iClever 10,000 milliamp hour portable solar power bank.
Huh.
So
really,
obviously, it's 10,000 milliamp hour.
Yeah.
It's pretty good. It's about the size of maybe two iPhones stacked on top of one another. So it's 10,000 milliamp hours. You can charge it either through USB, and it has two USB ports, one regular power, one high power. And it also has a solar cell. So if you want to, it's not going to charge as fast as the solar cells is through USB, but, you know, if you're out in the sun and you want to top it off, it's good for that. The lights will blink if it gets enough solar energy.
Okay.
It also has a flashlight. And they also claim it is, I forget the specification, water resistant, let's call it. I would say waterproof.
Sure, yeah. It probably is, but you know, a lot.
I think
of
they
these
gave
things,
the rating. They say it's IP, whatever it is. But there you go. And quickly, the deal thing. So the thing is, the original. I think I got it on Thrifter, and it was $19.99. I paid on Amazon, and then I found through this other plugin, Dave, the Honey one. It's now down to $17.99.
Nice.
Yeah, we talked about Honey before.
We did. Yeah, I'll put a link in the show notes.
And they also have from what I saw, they kind of integrate with Amazon, and they'll say, "Oh yeah, if you want an alert on this,
right?"
So they also do the price tracking, which is kind of cool. But cool. I think it's a great travel battery pack.
Cool. Hey, I'll kind of along the same lines, I have been checking out this thing from MyCharge called the Adventure Jumpstart. So it too is a battery pack. Now, as a battery pack, it's 6,600 milliamp hours, right? So plenty to recharge your iPhone a couple of times, maybe even three times, enough to top off your iPad. But the unique feature of this one is that the amperage that it can put out blows away any other battery pack. It can do a 400 amp peak jump start current and a 200 amp jump start current. And it comes with jumper cables to plug it to connect to your car. So you keep this thing in your car, you keep it charged up, and when you need a jump, you give it to yourself right then and there. You just connect it up to the, you know, either the terminals on your battery or whatever you're supposed to do in your car, and that might be different. But you just connect it up, connect it to the to the MyCharge Adventure Jumpstart thing, and boom, start your car. You're up and running, which I think is pretty cool. I now have these in our cars because in the winter, especially when we get those single digit temperatures, you leave your car for too long, you might wind up with a battery issue. So I don't know.
Absolutely. Yeah. The older it gets.
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
Yeah, so
yep.
Some serious energy in those things. No wonder they don't want them in the belly.
That's
of
tiny. I have one of it's these tiny. Huge monsters. I got one of these huge monstrous ones that weighs like probably like, you know, 10 or 15.
Oh,
pounds.
No, this thing's not much bigger than like your iPhone.
Yeah.
And in that sense. Yeah, I know.
Amazing.
It's pretty cool. Yep. And it's $100, at least on their site. It's $100. Maybe you can get it cheaper on Amazon too. Check one of the various things that we've talked about to find that. The iPhone X, you know, is it's got like a interesting curve and all that to the surface. So I've been checking out the Invisible Shield Glass and Lux 360 from Zag. This thing is so cool. It's actually a two part tempered glass shield, one that goes on the front and one that goes on the back. And it works really, it like feels good. It goes on super easy. They have like a little kit that helps you get it totally perfectly lined up, which is really the hard thing when you're doing the glass, because you don't want to have to take it off and put it back on, because then you risk dust kind of getting vacuum sucked in there when you peel it back up. So, yeah, pretty good stuff. So that's I put one of those on my iPhone X, and I forget that it's on there. It looks normal. It actually has a colored bezel. It's a black bezel on the one that I have, but I don't notice it because it's black against the iPhone's black, and just feels good, works with the case. It's great. So I like it. Good? Yeah, John?
Mm-hmm.
Cool. Couple more cool stuffs found to add. We've long been fans of Edemotics headphones here. I think when we started doing the show, at least you and maybe even me were using their old ER6s on for in-ear monitoring while we were doing the show. Well, they've come out with a new set of headphones, and these are the ER4s. And these things are, it's cool. They, I'm trying to pull it up here. They have it on their website, and I pulled up the wrong thing, and now I'm all confused, but I'll get there. So there's two models. There's the reference or studio response, and then there's the extended response of these ER4s. And I asked him to send me the studio response because I tend not to like too much low end in my sound. They accidentally sent me the extended response ones, which they say have more low end. And I actually think these sound great. Like the whatever they've done to the extended response really fills it out without it sounding, you know, it doesn't sound like those Beats headphones, right? Really nice sound. My guess is the studio reference would sound more like a studio reference monitor, which is more flat response and maybe not quite as musical. I don't know. I haven't tested them, but that would be my guess. But these extended response ones sound great. They're super comfortable in the ear. They have that triple flanged thing that Edemotic is sort of known for. I don't know if they were the ones that pioneered it. They may well have been. But those triple flanged earpieces last a long time, way more than the foam ones do. They really seal and fit in the ear comfortably. So stoked to see Edemotic doing this stuff now. It's always good. Always good. One of our favorite brands. And it does come with the foam ones if you prefer those and all that stuff. But yeah, we'll put a link to those in the show notes. Good stuff. Thoughts on that, John?
You're not ER6 is kicking around somewhere.
Do you really? Yeah. Those ER6s, I mean, you know, that's the thing is they last, right?
Well, I like them also because the seal is good enough where actually a lot of times I'll use them when flying, if I remember.
Sure. Correctly. Yeah, they're great for that because they're just out of the way. And the ER4s are the same way. They're just small and out of the way. But yeah, you put these in when you're flying, you're not going to hear anything around you, which is key. I talked last year, right about this time, about a 27-inch display that I bought from Monoprice. And then I proceeded to talk about how it didn't want to wake up with my Mac, right? I either had to restart my Mac or power cycle the display. There's just some issue with that particular 27-inch, you know, 4K display from Monoprice. Well, there's a new one, the 27-inch UHD IPS 4K Ultra Slim aluminum monitor from Monoprice that I've been using for a couple of months now. And I was hesitant to talk about it until I really had the opportunity to test it for a longer period of time to make sure that it always wakes up. It always wakes up. It knows the Mac. It knows whatever it needs to know. And it looks great. If your Mac supports Retina displays, this will your Mac will then see this as a Retina capable display in that way where it'll do higher density just like a Retina display does. Your Mac will see it this way. So depending on your Mac's video capabilities, even if your Mac isn't Retina capable, it will see this as a Retina capable display. But again, depending on how much VRAM you have, it may or may not be able to fully take advantage of it. But man, it looks great. Always wakes up. I've had it at my desk in my office, like I said, for a couple of months, and it's just an extension of my Mac now. Really, really nice stuff. So we'll put a link to that in the show notes. Good stuff. You got one last cool stuff found for us, John?
I got one last one, Dave.
Cool.
That I did get at a show.
All right.
And it's from a company called BioKey, and they call it their BioKey Touch Lock.
Okay.
Well, you can probably guess what mechanism you use in order to open and close it. Well, closing it is easy, but how do you open it? You use your fingerprint. It's like a Touch ID lock.
Really?
I think that's pretty much...
Yeah, that's it, right, yeah.
Huh. Pretty much pulled it out of the pack here. So, you know, if you want to program a fingerprint, you hold down the latch part, and then an LED comes on, and it says, okay, register your fingerprint. You hold your fingerprint there.
Huh.
And then I use my fingerprint to open it. But you can also use it for family and friends. It'll store up to 20 fingerprints. They have various colors and designs.
Wow.
And you got to charge it, and it has a USB port where you can charge it as well.
Hmm.
But I think it lasts a pretty long time. So, and I looked at this company. These guys make a ton of fingerprint scanning verification products.
Sure.
Mostly it looks like for Windows, but it looks like they've been doing this thing for a long time here. But I thought it was pretty elegant.
That's pretty cool, man. Huh. Look at that.
Yeah, I saw they had another one that was like a TSA type one.
I was just going to ask if they had a TSA approved version of this, because that would be the next question. Yeah. Huh.
Yeah, they got that. They got a, check out the site.
Cool.
Link to this product and look at some of the other things. But it, you know, I was able to figure it out within a couple of minutes. So
very cool. Very cool. Cool. You know, I want to take a minute, as we always do, and thank our premium subscribers that contributed this week. But really, you know, again, as I said at the beginning of this, you know, 700 episodes, it's all about you. You folks are the, like, we love doing this, but we do it for you. And it's you that really makes us stop and make sure we've got things the best we can for you and put on the best show we possibly can every week. So thank you to all of you. And for this week, specific thanks out on our biannual plan at $25 every 6 months. Anthony B, Joe B, Eric R, Drake Z, and Terry O. And then on our monthly $10 plan, Abdullah B, Paul M, Mike C, Mike Mark R, Dave C, Pierre Timo, Neil L, and Frank A. And then a one-time contribution of $25 from Mark S. Thank you so much to all of you. If you want to learn more about that, of course, MacGeekab.com/premium if you are interested and able. And if you're not, it's okay. Like, keep sending in your questions. Keep listening. Like I said earlier, you know, when we put sponsors in the show, which we usually have, go check out their stuff. That's all we ask. If it turns out to be something that's going to be good for you and you want to buy, awesome. But our job is to get you to check it out and generate some interest. And so hopefully we're doing that, and we really appreciate it when you follow through on that stuff. That makes a huge difference for us. So thank you. All right. I think we've got time for a couple of tips and maybe some follow-ups. So a quick tip that kind of falls into the cool stuff found, revisited category, because I think we've talked about this before, is from listener David, who shares that if your AirPods are lost, you can use the Find My iPhone app to find them. But this only works if they're out of the case, because they need to be in a mode where they're wanting to pair with your phone. Otherwise, it doesn't work. And
you need to change that, Apple.
Yeah, no kidding.
Where's my case?
Where are my AirPods? I've gone a week without using my AirPods because I lose them. So... I have this Catalyst case for the AirPods that I keep them in, and that, for some reason, having them in this case, probably because it has this little carabiner thing on it, makes it so that I don't lose them. But I don't know. Yeah.
So do they have to be in Bluetooth range?
Yes. Yeah. AirPods are Bluetooth only. That's right. Yeah. Yeah.
I wonder if they give you last known location.
They will.
Yeah.
Yeah, but that's, I mean, these things are tiny.
No, I know it.
You know,
I know.
It's in your house.
My sister's boyfriend lost his right one, or one of the two, within hours of first getting them. What a bummer.
When you play the Find My app, it makes a sound out of the AirPod. So
They were on a busy New York street and went back and looked for it, and it was gone. It was a bummer. But
that's a bummer.
But I've actually managed to use that to find it in the cushion. It fell out of my pocket and down into there.
Make sure it's not in your ear when you do this, because the sound is loud. Yeah.
Yes.
So cool. Thanks, David. Thanks for the reminder on that. And then from Brother Jay, We were having a crazy conversation via email about all kinds of like firewalls, and he wants to do some things where he routes traffic only from his Plex server to a VPN, but not other things. And so, or not, he wants to route his Plex server not through a VPN so he can access it from the outside, but he wants to do other things. And Apple's firewall uses, there's all kind, of course, it's Unix based. There are several different common Unix utilities that are the basis or the foundation of most firewalls. Those are things like IP tables, IPFW, or IP chains. Apple doesn't use any of those. Apple uses something called PF. And then there is a command line control called PFCTL that I've never used to manage a firewall, but certainly you could. Brother Jay reminds me and reminds us of something we have mentioned before and Cool Stuff Found called Murus, M-U-R-U-S, at murusfirewall.com, that is a graphical interface to PF. PF stands for packet filter, as I'm told. So you can do a lot of things. I'm sure there's some things that PF will do that Murus hasn't built into the graphical app, but it doesn't look like that list is all that long. This seems pretty full-featured, and you get to do it all graphically. So go ahead and check out Murus Firewall if you're of that ilk. So thanks for the reminder, Brother Jay. Good stuff. All right, two things from Robin and two things from Simon and one from Robin. Following up from the last show, episode 699. Robin writes us and says we were talking about Qi chargers in the last show. And Robin says, I've enjoyed that segment. I also bought several of them. And one thing I've noticed is that when my iPhone X is completely drained, it cannot be charged by Qi. It only works when I first connect via the cable to give it an initial load to the iPhone. Did you experience the same? I do remember this. This happened only once for me. But yeah, I wasn't able to get it to kind of pair with the Qi coil when it was dead. I don't know if that's how it's supposed to be, but it certainly, I guess it makes sense if there's truly a pairing thing. Although the Apple Watch will pair when dead with its wireless charging thing, which, as we said last week, is kind of sort of Qi, but not really. So have you had a dead phone yet, John, and tried to revive it with a Qi charge?
No.
Okay. Okay.
No, I have run it all the way down.
Sure.
But then, yeah, I plugged it in. Plugged, yeah, I haven't tried that yet. I'll have to see if, how the 7 reacts, or the 8 reacts.
I was just going to say, you don't have an 8. you don't have a 7, you have an 8. Yep. Simon wrote in, again, regarding Qi. We were talking about putting it on your bedside table and finding something that didn't have a bright light shining all night. And he found at IKEA, of all places, the Rallen. That's a R-A-L-L-E-N with an umlaut over the A. So almost in Spinal Tap world here with the way these things look. But anyway, the Rallen is a Qi charger that has its shape is... it's almost conical in a sense. And it says that you use a fix-a-hole saw, F-I-X-A. You could just lay this thing on your desk or your bedside table, but you can also drill a hole that this thing will just drop into. And then it lies flush and flat with your either desktop or bedside table. And Simon says that the light is... he says it's designed to be installed into a desktop. I bought it and drilled the hole. It is sunk into the tabletop and looks great, almost invisible. The LED is white and is off when not charging, and it's white when charging. But as this charger is so small, the light is covered by the phone and you can't see it if you have your phone on top of it. But it also does flash if there's a problem. So he says, I love it, and it's hidden well inside my desk. So very cool stuff. We will, of course, put a link in the show notes to that. I love these kinds of things. Yeah, it's pretty good.
You don't have to assemble it yourself, right?
No. If you want to drill it, that you've got to do on your own. Yeah.
Mama wouldn't be happy if I did that to the bedside table.
Right. That's the thing. Yeah, exactly. Yep. And then also from Simon from episode 699, we were talking about email and push notifications and all of that stuff. And it was Simon's question, I believe. But he says, I started using an email app called Spark. It's available on both Mac and iOS, and it gives me instant notifications similar to push and also allows me to use multiple from addresses. He says it's great, and I've decided to use it as my main mail client. Very easy to set up, and it syncs settings across multiple platforms. So there you go. We've mentioned Spark on the show before. It's from the folks at Readdle, R-E-A-D-D-L-E. But we'll put a link to Spark. I think it's sparkmailapp.com. And I've tested Spark. It's actually quite good. I have a hard time changing mail apps. I mean, that's always like a big commitment. But I've been very impressed with Spark as far as third party mail clients go. I think it's the best I've checked out. So yeah, lots of people in the chat room saying the same thing. So it's good. It's good. Any thoughts on that, John?
I haven't installed and I get updates for it, but I haven't actually used it.
You don't use it actively. Got it. Yeah, no problem. Well, despite the fact that in the middle of the show, I screwed up the timing and I have no idea where we are on the time, I actually do have some idea. And it's time. We got to go.
The band somehow knows when to start playing.
The music just magically knows. That's right. If there is a podcast, it's totally not safe for anyone ever, anywhere. So
don't listen to it.
Right. So don't listen to it. But no, it's called the 10-Minute Podcast. And it's three comedians, completely irreverent. But they have their theme music always playing. But it has a gap of silence. And the show is exactly 10 minutes long because the music starts fading in as they're approaching the 10-minute mark. And that's it. That's it.
It's a hard break, man.
It's a hard break. That's it. Yep. So.
Wow.
Yeah. And there's been some episodes where I wish the music hadn't come in and some where it's like, oh, thank goodness. But anyway, yeah, don't listen to it. I can't recommend it at all. Visit us on Facebook, MattGeekGab.com/Facebook. Visit us. You can send us email. Feedback@MattGeekGab.com.
No. Feedback@MattGeekGab.com.
No, I heard Dave say feedback@MattGeekGab.com.
I don't know what you guys are talking about. I said premium@MattGeekGab.com for all of the folks that are premium members that can use that address and get faster responses, generally speaking. Or you can call us at 224-888-GEEK, which, John, is
4335.
Find one last place where they can find us, Mr. Braun.
Oh my gosh. I guess it would have to be Twitter.
All right.
I am John F. Braun. He is Dave Hamilton. That other guy is Pilot Pete. The podcast is Mac Geek Gab, and the publication is Mac Observer. Follow at twitter.com.
Sweet. That's what we got this time. I want to thank, of course, all our sponsors. We've got Ring at ring.com/MGG, Molecule with a K, with coupon code MGG. Of course, in the podcast marketplace, we've got Smile at smilesoftware.com/podcast, Otherworld Computing at maxsales.com, Barebones Software at barebones.com. Our thanks to Cashfly, CACGFLY.com. All of that can be found at MacGeekGab.com/sponsors, too. At any time, all the deals, we keep them up to date there. That's right. Pete, what do you have to say? Anything? Lasting advice?
Yeah, all this cool stuff found, all this stuff you're advertising. Oh, man, my wallet. Oh. Oh, no, wasn't that? Okay. And that's why I love this show, but boy, is it expensive to listen to.
Yeah, that we know. The Cool Stuff Found episodes are costly. We're aware.
Yeah, good stuff. But
for us, too.
Yeah. So, but if you're going to go out and spend that money, and mama's looking through your wallet later, all I can tell you is don't get caught.
Made up.